Now you just listen to me, Gordo Smith.
Smith backed away across his forge, hands half raised to ward off the old woman's fury. She advanced on him, one finger stabbing the air righteously.
I brought you into the world, you stupid man, and you've got no more sense in you now than you had then. But,
Smith tried, dodging around the anvil.
The magic's found her. Wizard magic. Wrong magic. Do you understand? It was never intended for her. Yes, but have you any idea of what it can do?
Smith sagged. No. Granny paused and deflated a little. No, she repeated, more softly. No, you wouldn't. She sat down on the anvil and tried to think calm thoughts.
Look, magic has a sort of life of its own. That doesn't matter, because, anyway, you see, wizard magic.
She looked up at his big, blank expression and tried again.
Well, you know cider.
Smith nodded. He felt he was on firmer ground here, but he wasn't certain of where it was going to lead.
And then there's the liquor. Applejack, said the witch.
The smith nodded. Everyone in Badass made Applejack in the winter by leaving cider tubs outside overnight and taking out the ice until a tiny core of alcohol was left.
Well, you can drink lots of cider and you just feel better, and that's it, isn't it?
The smith nodded again.
But Applejack, you drink that in little mugs and you don't drink a lot and you don't drink it often because it goes right to your head.
The smith nodded again and, aware that he wasn't making a major contribution to the dialogue, added,
That's right.
That's the difference, said Granny.
The difference from what?
Granny sighed. The difference between witch magic and wizard magic, she said. And it's found her, and if she doesn't control it, then there are those who will control her. Magic can be a sort of door, and there are unpleasant things on the other side. Do you understand?
The smith nodded. He didn't really understand, but he correctly surmised that if he revealed this fact, Granny would start going into horrible details.
She's strong in her mind, and it might take a while, said Granny, but sooner or later they'll challenge her.
Smith picked up a hammer from his bench, looked at it as though he had never seen it before, and put it down again.
But, he said, if it's wizard magic she's got, learning witchery won't be any good, will it? You said they're different.
They're both magic. If you can't learn to ride an elephant, you can at least learn to ride a horse.
What's an elephant?
A kind of badger, said Granny. She hadn't maintained forest credibility for 40 years by ever admitting ignorance. The blacksmith sighed. He knew he was beaten. His wife had made it clear that she favoured the idea, and now that he came to think about it, there were some advantages. After all, Granny wouldn't last forever, and being father to the area's only witch might not be too bad at that.
All right, he said.
And so, as the winter turned and started the long, reluctant climb towards spring, Esk spent days at a time with Granny Weatherwax, learning witchcraft. It seemed to consist mainly of things to remember. The lessons were quite practical. There was cleaning the kitchen table and basic herbalism. There was mucking out the goats and the uses of fungi. There was doing the washing and the summoning of the small gods. And there was always tending the big copper still in the scullery and the theory and practice of distillation. By the time the warm rim winds were blowing and the snow remained only as little streaks of slush on the hub side of trees, Esk knew how to prepare a range of ointments, several medicinal brandies, a score of special infusions, and a number of mysterious potions that Granny said she might learn the use of in good time. What she hadn't done was any magic at all.
All in good time, repeated Granny vaguely. But I'm supposed to be a witch.
You're not a witch yet. Name me 3 herbs good for the bowels. Esk put her hands behind her back, closed her eyes and said,
The flowering tops of greater peahane, the root pith of old man's trousers, the stems of the bloodwater lily, the seed cases of...
All right,
Where may water gherkins be found? Peat bogs and stagnant pools from the months of... Good. You're learning. But it's not magic.
Granny sat down at the kitchen table. Most magic isn't, she said.
It's just knowing the right herbs and learning to watch the weather and finding out the ways of animals and the ways of people too.
That's all it is, said Esk, horrified.
All? It's a pretty big all, said Granny. But no, it isn't all. There's other stuff.
Can't you teach me?
All in good time. There's no call to go showing yourself yet.
Showing myself? Who to?
Granny's eyes darted towards the shadows in the corners of the room. Never you mind. Then even the last lingering tales of snow had gone and the spring gales roared around the mountains. The air in the forest began to smell of leaf mould and turpentine. A few early flowers braved the night frosts and the bees started to fly.
Now bees, said Granny Weatherwax, is real magic.
She carefully lifted the lid of the first hive.
Your bees, she went on. Is your mead, your wax, your bee gum, your honey. A wonderful thing is your bee. Ruled by a queen, too, she added with a touch of approval.
Don't they sting you?
Said Esk, standing back a little. Bees boiled out of the comb and overflowed the rough wooden sides of the box.
Hardly ever, said Granny. You wanted magic. Watch.
She put a hand into the struggling mass of insects and made a shrill, faint piping noise at the back of her throat. There was a movement in the mass, and a large bee, longer and fatter than the others, crawled onto her hand. A few workers followed it, stroking it and generally ministering to it.
How did you do that? Said Esk.
Ah, said Granny. Wouldn't you like to know?
Yes, I would. That's why I asked, Granny, said Esk severely.
Do you think I used magic?
Esk looked down at the queen bee. She looked up at the witch.
No, she said. I think you just know a lot about bees.
Granny grinned.
Exactly correct. That's one form of magic, of course.
What, just knowing things?
Knowing things that other people don't know, said Granny. She carefully dropped the queen back among her subjects and closed the lid of the hive.
And I think it's time you learned a few secrets, she added.
At last, thought Esk.
But first, we must pay our respects to the hive, said Granny. She managed to sound the capital H.
Without thinking, Esk bobbed a curtsy. Granny's hand clipped the back of her head.
Bow, I told you, she said, without rancour. Witches bow, she demonstrated.
But why? Complained Esk.
Because witches have got to be different, and that's part of the secret, said Granny.
They sat on a bleached bench in front of the rimwood wall of the cottage. In front of them the herbs were already a foot high, a sinister collection of pale green leaves.
Right, said Granny, settling herself down. You know the hat in the hall by the door? Go and fetch it.
Esk obediently went inside and unhooked Granny's hat. It was tall, pointed, and, of course, black. Granny turned it over in her hands and regarded it carefully.
Inside this hat, she said solemnly, is one of the secrets of witchcraft. If you cannot tell me what it is, then I might as well teach you no more, because once you learn the secret of the hat, there is no going back.
Tell me what you know about the hat.
Can I hold it?
Be my guest. Esk peered inside the hat. There was some wire stiffening to give it a shape and a couple of hat pins. That was all. There was nothing particularly strange about it, except that no one in the village had one like it. But that didn't make it magical. Esk bit her lip. She had a vision of herself being sent home in disgrace. It didn't feel strange. And there were no hidden pockets. It was just a typical witch's hat. Granny always wore it when she went into the village, but in the forest she just wore a leather hood. She tried to recall the bits of lessons that Granny grudgingly doled out. It isn't what you know, it's what other people don't know. Magic can be something right in the wrong place, or something wrong in the right place. It can be... Granny always wore it to the village. And the big black cloak, which certainly wasn't magical because for most of the winter it had been a goat blanket and Granny washed it in the spring. Esk began to feel the shape of the answer, and she didn't like it much. It was like a lot of Granny's answers. Just a word trick. She just said things you knew all the time, but in a different way so they sounded important.
I think I know, she said at last.
Out with it, then.
It's in sort of two parts.
Well?
It's a witch's hat because you wear it. But you're a witch because you wear the hat.
So, prompted Granny.
So people see you coming in the hat and the cloak and they know you're a witch and that's why your magic works? Said Esk.
That's right, said Granny. It's called headology.
She tapped her silver hair, which was drawn into a tight bun that could crack rocks.
But it's not real! Esk protested. That's not magic, it's...
Listen, said Granny. If you give someone a bottle of red jollop for their wind, it may work, right? But if you want it to work for sure, then you let their mind make it work for them. Tell them it's moonbeams, bottled in fairy wine or something. Mumble over it a bit.
It's the same with cursing.
Cursing? Said Esk weakly.
Aye, cursing, my girl, and no need to look so shocked. You'll curse when the need comes,
when you're alone and there's no help to hand, and...
She hesitated and, uncomfortably aware of Esk's questioning eyes, finished lamely.
And people aren't showing respect. Make it loud, make it complicated, make it long, and make it up if you have to, but it'll work all right. Next day, when they hit their thumb, or they fall off a ladder, or their dog dropped dead... They'll remember you. They'll behave better next time.
But it still doesn't seem like magic, said Esk, scuffing the dust with her feet.
I saved a man's life once, said Granny. Special medicine twice a day, boiled water with a bit of berry juice in it. Told him I'd bought it from the dwarves.
That's the biggest part of doctrine, really.
Most people get over most things if they put their minds to it. You just have to give them an interest.
She patted Esk's hand as nicely as possible.
You're a bit young for this, she said, but as you grow older, you'll find most people don't set foot outside their own heads much.
You too, she added gnomically.
I don't understand.
I'd be very surprised if you did, said Granny briskly. But you can tell me 5 herbs suitable for dry coughs.
Spring began to unfold in earnest. Granny started taking Esk on long walks that took all day to hidden ponds or high onto the mountain scree to collect rare plants. Esk enjoyed that, high on the hills where the sun beat down strongly but the air was nevertheless freezing cold. Plants grew thickly and hugged the ground. From some of the highest peaks she could see all the way to the rim ocean that ran around the edge of the world. In the other direction, the ram tops marched into the distance, wrapped in eternal winter. They went all the way to the hub of the world, where, it was generally agreed, the gods lived on a 10-mile-high mountain of rock and ice.
Gods are all right, said Granny as they ate their lunch and looked at the view. You don't bother gods, and gods don't come bothering you.
Do you know many gods?
I've seen the thunder gods a few times, said Granny. And Hoki, of course.
Hoki?
Granny chewed a crustless sandwich.
Oh, he's a nature god, she said. Sometimes he manifests himself as an oak tree or half a man and half a goat. But mainly I see him in his aspect as a bloody nuisance. You only find him in the deep woods, of course. He plays the flute. Very badly, if you must know.
Esk lay on her stomach and looked out across the lands below while a few hardy, self-employed bumblebees patrolled the time clusters. The sun was warm on her back, but Up here there were still drifts of snow on the hub side of rocks.
"Tell me about the lands down there," she said lazily.
Granny peered disapprovingly at 10,000 miles of landscape.
"They're just other places," she said, "just like here, only different."
"Are there cities and things?"
"I dare say."
"Haven't you ever been to look?"
Granny sat back, gingerly arranging her skirt to expose several inches of respectable flannelette to the sun and let the heat caress her old bones.
"No," she said, "there's quite enough troubles around here without going to look for them in foreign parts."
"I dreamed of a city once," said Esk. "It had hundreds of people in it, and there was this building with big gates, and they were magical gates."
A sound like tearing cloth came from behind her. Granny had fallen asleep.
"Granny?"
"Hmm?"
Esk thought for a moment.
"Are you having a good time?" she said artfully.
"Hmm?"
"You said you'd show me some real magic all in good time," said Esk. "And this is a good time."
Granny Weatherwax opened her eyes and looked straight up at the sky. It was darker up here, more purple than blue. She thought, why not? She's a quick learner. She knows more herb lore than I do. At her age, old Gamma Tumult had me burrowing and shifting and sending all the hours of the day. Maybe I'm being too cautious.
"Just a bit," pleaded Esk.
Granny turned it over in her mind. She couldn't think of any more excuses. "I'm surely going to regret this," she told herself, displaying considerable foresight. "All right," she said shortly.
"Real magic," said Esk. "Not more herbs or headology."
"Real magic, as you call it, yes."
"A spell?"
"No, a borrowing." Esk's face was a picture of expectation. She looked more alive, it seemed to Granny, than she had ever been before. Granny looked over the valleys stretching out before them until she found what she was after. A grey eagle was circling lazily over a distant, blue-hazed patch of forest. Its mind was currently at ease. It would do nicely. She called it gently, and it began to circle towards them.
"The first thing to remember about borrowing is that you must be comfortable and somewhere safe," she said, smoothing out the grass behind her.
"Bed's best."
"But what is borrowing?"
"Lie down and hold my hand. Do you see the eagle up there?"
Esk squinted into the dark, hot sky.
There were two doll figures on the grass below as she pivoted on the wind.
She could feel the whip and wire of the air through her feathers, because the eagle was not hunting, but simply enjoying the feel of the sun on its wings. The land below was a mere unimportant shape. But the air was a complex, changing, three-dimensional thing. An interlocked pattern of spirals and curves that stretched away into the distance, a switchback of currents built around thermal pillars. She felt a gentle pressure restraining her.
"The next thing to remember," said Granny's voice very close, "is not to upset the owner. If you let it know you're there, it'll either fight you or panic, and you won't stand a chance either way. It's had a lifetime of being an eagle, and you haven't."
Esk said nothing.
"You're not frightened, are you?" said Granny. "It can take you that way the first time, and..."
"I'm not frightened," said Esk. "And how do I control it?"
"You don't, not yet. Anyway, controlling a truly wild creature isn't easily learned. You have to sort of suggest to it that it might feel inclined to do things. With a tame animal, of course, it's all different, but you can't make any creature do anything that is totally against its nature. Now try and find the eagle's mind."
Esk could sense Granny as a diffuse silver cloud at the back of her own mind. After some searching, she found the eagle. She almost missed it. Its mind was small, sharp and purple like an arrowhead. It was concentrating entirely on flying, and took no notice of her.
Good, said Granny approvingly. We're not going to go far. If you want to make it turn, you must...
Yes, yes, said Esk. She flexed her fingers wherever they were, and the bird leaned against the air and turned.
Very good, said Granny, taken aback. How did you do that?
I don't know. It just seemed obvious.
Granny gently tested the tiny eagle mind. It was still totally oblivious of its passengers. She was genuinely impressed. A very rare occurrence. They floated over the mountain while Esk excitedly explored the eagle's senses. Granny's voice droned through her consciousness, giving instructions and guidance and warnings. She listened with half an ear. It sounded far too complicated. Why couldn't she take over the eagle's mind? It wouldn't hurt it. She could see how to do it. It was just a knack, like snapping your fingers, which in fact she had never managed to achieve. And then she'd be able to experience flying for real, not at second hand. Then she could...
Don't, said Granny calmly. No good will come of it.
What? Do you really think you're the first, my girl? Do you think we haven't all thought what a fine thing it would be to take on another body and tread the wind or breathe the water? And do you really think it would be as easy as that?
Esk glowered at her.
No need to look like that, said Granny. You'll thank me one day. Don't you start playing around before you know what you're about, eh? Before you get up to tricks, you've got to learn what to do if things go wrong. Don't try to walk before you can run.
I can feel how to do it, Granny.
That's as may be. It's harder than it seems, is borrowing, although I'll grant you you've got a knack. That's enough for today. Bring us in over ourselves and I'll show you how to return.
The eagle beat the air over the two recumbent forms and Esk saw, in her mind's eye, two channels open for them. Granny's mind shape vanished.
Now, Granny had been wrong. The eagle mind barely fought and didn't have time to panic. Esk held it wrapped in her own mind.
It writhed for an instant and then melted into her. Granny opened her eyes in time to see the bird give a hoarse cry of triumph, curve down low over the grass-grown scree, and skim away down the mountainside. For a moment it was a vanishing dot, and then it had gone, leaving only another echoing shriek. Granny looked down at Esk's silent form. The girl was light enough, but it was a long way home, and the afternoon was dwindling.
Drat! She said with no particular emphasis.
She stood up, brushed herself down, and with a grunt of effort hauled Esk's inert body over her shoulder. High in the crystal sunset air above the mountains, the eagle Esk sought more height, drunk with the sheer vitality of flight. On the way home, Granny met a hungry bear. Granny's back was giving her jip, and she was in no mood to be growled at. She muttered a few words under her breath, and the bear, to its brief amazement, walked heavily into a tree and didn't regain consciousness for several hours.